radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite show. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past and smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Well, thanks, Dave, and it's time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, it's Lights Out with The Haunted Cell. But first, let's enjoy the comedic stylings of none other than Jack Benny. The Jack Benny program spanned some 23 years with great success all the way. In 1932, Benny was a top stage headliner. His show, premiering on NBC Blue in May of 1932, was a solid hit. Don Wilson, after stints as a salesman, singer, and sportscaster, had become Benny's announcer in 1934. Sponsorship passed from Jell-O to Grape Nuts Flakes in 1942, and by 1944, Benny began his long association with Lucky Strike. In 1949, CBS scored the greatest coup in broadcasting, luring Benny away from NBC with a deal involving $2 million. On CBS, Benny continued in his 7 p.m. Sunday time slot until May of 1955, his last live broadcast on radio. Reruns of the show continued until 1958. So now, let's step back in time and enjoy the Jack Benny program with special guest star Bing Crosby from February of 1953. Another classic program from the radio vault of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Bert and Marge, Amos and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past and smile again. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
The Jack Benny Program. Broadcasting from the American Legion Hall in Palm Springs, California, the Lucky Strike program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, and yours truly, Don Wilson. And now, ladies and gentlemen, I bring you a man who, after 1 week in Palm Springs, has become a picture of health. He was on the golf course Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday looking for the ball he lost on Monday. And here he is, Jack Benny.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking. And now, ladies and gentlemen, since this is our second week...
Oh, wait a minute, Jack. Wait a minute.
Huh?
Jack, did you really lose a golf ball?
Certainly, Don. I even asked you to help me look for it all over the desert. And now, ladies and gentlemen, since this is our second week...
Oh, Jack, something tells me you tricked me.
I tricked you?
Yes. As we were coming past Roger's stable, you said, Don, you'll never find the ball that way. Stoop over. I did. You threw a saddle on me, and for the rest of the day, tried to rent me out for $1.25 an hour.
He found out. I thought I was being subtle, too. You know, I can't... Oh, hello, Mary.
Hello, Jack. Hello, everybody.
Mary, why didn't you show up for rehearsal this morning?
Well, if you must know, for one thing, I was busy moving out of that hotel where you're living.
But, Mary, I've stayed in that hotel for the last 2 weeks. It may be small and crowded, but it's a lovely place.
Some lovely place. This morning, a guest bawled me off for using a roller towel.
Why?
He was sleeping in it.
Well, Mary, it's the height of the season. People have to sleep where they can. As a matter of fact, I happen to know that last night, some people had to sleep in the police station.
Jack, that was the orchestra, and the height of the season had nothing to do with it.
Oh.
Say, Mary, you're kidding about the orchestra being arrested, aren't you?
No, I'm not, Don.
Well, for heaven's sakes, what'd they do?
I don't know about the others, but the police found Remley lying against the curb, and he hadn't put a penny in the parking meter.
Mary, stop making up jokes. Now, you know the boys in the band. Oh, hello, Bob.
Hiya, Jack. Hello, Mary.
Hello, Bob.
Well, Bob, are you still enjoying yourself here in Palm Springs?
Pretty good.
What do you mean, pretty good? You're living at one of the swankiest places in town, the El Mirador.
Well, that's right, Bob. And you know, during the war, the El Mirador was a hospital, but it isn't anymore.
Well, I wish someone would tell the waiters.
Why?
Well, last night I ordered borscht.
Borscht? Mm-hmm. Well, didn't it taste good?
Who knows? They laid me on the table and shot it in my arm.
You're kidding.
Kidding. Look at this muscle. It's a potato.
Well, how do you like that?
Then for dessert, they gave me an anesthetic.
Well, Bob, that had nothing to do with the dinner. Everybody who lives at the El Mirador gets an anesthetic.
Yeah, but why?
That way they can give you the bill and you won't come to till you go through banning.
Well, that explains a lot of things.
Yeah, it really explains a lot of things.
Yeah. Like what?
Well, when I drove up to the place, the bellboy came out, carried in my wallet, and left my bags in the driveway.
Sorry I took your line then, Bob. Anything happens when you do that. I take his lines, he takes somebody else's. That's because we don't rehearse, you know. Well, anyway, at the El Mirador is really one of the nicest. Come in.
Telegram for Mr. Jack Benny.
I'll take it, boy.
Here you are.
Oh, just a minute, boy. Have you got change for a $5 bill?
Change for a $5? Yeah, I think so.
Good, good. Here's the $5 bill.
All right, here's your change. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Okay, boy, you can go now.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Benny. Thank you. This is my lucky day.
Wait a minute, boy. What do you mean this is your lucky day? Mr. Benny gave you a $5 bill, and you gave him back 5 ones. What are you so happy about?
When you do business with him and break even, it ain't bad.
Of course not. Go already.
Jack, who's the telegram from?
Just a minute. I'll see. It's from Dennis Day. Says, sorry, I can't be on the program today, so I'm sending a substitute singer to take my place. The reason I am missing the program is because I'm eloping with Marilyn Monroe. However, I'm silly enough to be back with you next week. That crazy kid making up jokes for a telegram. 6 cents a word. It's ridiculous.
Say, Jack, why did he say he's sending over a substitute? I can sing.
Why, certainly, Bob. That's exactly what you're going to do. Any substitute that Dennis would send over would probably be some silly jerk who doesn't even know how to... Now, who can that be? Come in.
Jack, look who it is.
Bing Crosby. Well, Bing.
Just call me substitute.
Bing, I'm surprised, actually amazed, that you're the one that's taking Dennis's place today.
Why, Jack? What's so amazing about that?
Well, let's face it. How can a kid like Dennis afford to pay a big star like you for a guest appearance?
Wait a minute, Jack. Dennis isn't paying me anything. The kid and I worked out an exchange deal.
An exchange?
Mm-hmm. I do a guest shot for him today, and he caddies for me tomorrow.
Well, Bing, I don't like to cast aspersions on your business ability, but I think Dennis got the best of you on the deal.
No, he didn't, Jack. You see, tomorrow I'm playing a match with Ben Hogan at $100 a hole.
Wait a minute, you can't beat Ben Hogan. He's the best golfer in the country.
That's what I want with Dennis. He'll drive Hogan nuts.
Oh. There's some writing. I got 3 O's in there.
A little redundant. What?
You know,
I'm here.
You know my whole gang, don't you?
Oh, yeah. Say hi, fellas. And, oh, Mary.
Hello, Bing.
Well, I guess I know everybody except, who's the fella standing over there?
I'm your brother.
I didn't recognize you. How are you, Robert?
I'm fine, Bing. Gosh, I haven't seen you for months. In fact, not since I started working on Jack's program.
Gee, no wonder I didn't recognize you, kid. You got a lot thinner.
Now, wait a minute, Bing. If Bob lost any weight, it's not Jack's fault.
Certainly not.
Bob's working for peanuts, and peanuts are fattening.
Well, thank you, Mary. You know, Bing, it's quite a coincidence having you on the program. Only 3 weeks ago, we had your sidekick, Bob Hope, as a guest star.
Oh, really? How was old Sickle Snoot?
Sickle Snoot? Why do you call Hope that?
Well, his nose looks like a bagel with one bite out of it. I think... You think that's pretty...
Yeah, it does. You know, it does at that. Uh-huh.
Say, Bing, you and Bob Hope have made an awful lot of pictures together, haven't you?
Yes, and don't hit that word awful so hard, will you? Just kind of gloss that. Anyway, Beagle Beak is a little mad about it now because, you know, in every picture we make, I get the girl.
Oh, is that what makes him mad?
I get the money, too.
Oh, for heaven's sakes, Bing, with everything else you have, why are you so interested in money? Believe me, you can't take it with you.
They finally convinced you, huh?
Well, almost.
Say, Bing, what are you doing down here in Palm Springs?
Well, I've been doing some broadcasts, Mary, and I've been writing my autobiography.
No kidding.
Yeah, finally finished all the writing. I've titled it Call Me Lucky.
Say, Bing, the story of your life must be very interesting. Tell me about it.
Well, I was born in Tacoma, Washington, and... I tell you about it, Jack. You can read it in the Saturday Evening Post.
Oh, yes, the Saturday Evening Post, sure. That's only 15 cents.
Comes in eight installments.
Oh, well, tell me about it.
Well, Jack, this thing starts in the February 14th edition of the Saturday Evening Post, and you can read it there.
I know, but I want to hear the whole story at once. I don't want to wait 8 weeks.
Well, all right. You see, my life story starts off with my birth in the year 1914.
1914. Mm-hmm. See, this is 1953. 14 from 53. That would make you 39. Bing, you can't be 39.
What's the matter? You got it patented or something?
No, it's just that
finders keepers.
It is not. Look, Bing, do you have a copy of your autobiography with you?
Yeah, got it all right here, just as it appears in the Post.
Well, look, I'll tell you what. Suppose I read the story while you sing your song.
Well, what makes you think he'll sing a song?
What makes you think I won't? Let's go. Open up your heart and let the love shine through. Open up your heart and make my dreams come true. Why do you just hide behind it? Loosen up the chains that bind it. Open up your heart and let me in. Baby, I've been mighty lonesome. Baby, I've been mighty blue. And the reason for it all is plain to see. From the very first day I met you, you've been walking in all my dreams. It's time you gave a little thought to me. Butterfly loves the sunshine, and a pelican loves the sea, and a meadowlark loves to sing his happy song. Not one of them gets as lonesome as a lovesick bird like me, and it's all because my chickadee done me wrong. Why don't you open up your heart and let the love shine through? Open up your heart and make my dreams come true. Throw away the key that fits it. Tell them I'm the one that gets it. Open up your heart and let me in. Open up your heart and let me in.
Bingo, that was wonderful. And I just read your autobiography, and it's really interesting.
Say, Jack, I've got an idea.
What, Mary?
Well, since we've got Bing with us, why don't we dramatize his life story?
Say, that is a good idea. Look, Bing, suppose I do your life story on my show, then you can do the story of my life on your show.
Your life on a half-hour program?
Don't worry, we'll work it out. 8 installments. And now, ladies and gentlemen, a special preview of the life of Bing Crosby as it appears in the Saturday Evening Post. Oh, excuse me a minute. Hello?
I have a long-distance call from Mr. Jack Benny.
This is Jack Benny speaking. I'll take the call.
It's Collect.
Collect? Look, operator, I'm not taking any Collect call.
Just a moment. I'm sorry, Mr. Paley, but Mr. Benny said he isn't
taking... Mr. Paley? Oh, my goodness, operator, certainly I'll take the call.
Very well, Mr. Benny, go ahead.
Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
What? Rochester, you tricked me.
I had to, boss. I'm in the garage in San Bernardino, and I haven't got any money.
The garage? Something wrong with my car again? Rochester, answer me. Is there something wrong with my car?
Just a minute, boss. This is such a long story, I wrote it down.
Never mind that. Just tell me what happened.
Well, I was on my way down to Palm Springs to pick you up.
Uh-huh.
And as I was coming through Cucamonga, I was driving along the railroad tracks when suddenly I noticed the super chief was trying to pass me.
Trying to pass you?
So I accepted the challenge, put my foot down to the floor, and would you believe it, for the next 22 miles, we were side by side.
Rochester, how could you keep up with the super chief?
The mail hook had me by the back of the neck.
Well, that's one way of keeping up with it.
Yeah, we were coming along at 90 miles an hour, and then it happened.
What?
We came to a tunnel.
A tunnel? Oh, my goodness. Was the car wrecked?
Boys, if you see 4 flying saucers with hubcaps, they're yours.
That's terrible. Rochester, are you hurt?
No, I was protected by the ironing board.
Rochester, you had the ironing board in the car? Why?
If you found out I was just sitting there driving, you'd be awful mad.
I would not. Anyway, before you leave the garage, find out how much it'll cost to fix my car.
Oh, I already did that. In fact, I had 2 fellas look at it, and they each gave me an estimate. The first said $17.50, and the second fellow wanted $800.
Well, that's quite a difference. $800 out of the question for fixing up my car. What'll a fellow do for $17.50?
Bury it.
Bury it? Rochester, you didn't really have a wreck, did you?
Well, no, I didn't, boss.
Then why did you make up such a story?
Well, I knew I'd be late getting down to Palm Springs, so I started to make up an excuse, and it got away from me.
Well, that's ridiculous.
No, it isn't. I sold to the Saturday Evening Post in 8 installments.
All right, goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, say, boss.
Now what?
The director of your television show called and... he's already hired 700 dancing girls for your TV show next Sunday.
Rochester, I'm not having 700 dancing girls on my television show next Sunday.
Boss, you know that, and I know that, but let's lure the listeners.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, Rochester. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, we present our dramatization of the Saturday Evening Post autobiography of Bing Crosby, Call Me Lucky. Curtain. Music.
In the city of Tacoma, Washington, the stork paid a visit to Mr. and Mrs. Harry Crosby in the year 1914. It says here. The newborn baby was called Harry Lillis Crosby. Harry Lillis was a precocious baby and learned to speak quite young. At the age of 3 months, he said,
"Duh."
At the age of 4 months, he said,
"Da, da."
At 5 months,
"Da, da, da."
And at 6 months,
"Da, da, 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 da."
The baby grew into a child of school age, and he was a good pupil. and a clever one, too. While other kids brought the teacher apples, he brought her Minute Maid orange juice. Then at the age of 7, he received the nickname he made famous, Bing. It happened because his family lived next to a cherry orchard, and he was very fond of Bing cherries. Fortunately, he didn't live next to an orange grove, or today he might be known as Naval Crosby. At about this time, another blessed event took place in the Crosby home. The newcomer joined brothers Bing, Larry, Ted, and Everett, and he was named Robert. Bing took care of little Robert and tried to teach him to talk.
Come on, Bobby. Say mama. Duh. Come on, Bob. Say mama.
Duh.
No, mama. Say mama.
Mama Shepherdovitz.
That's how it started, folks. The boys grew up and began going to high school, and Mother Crosby thought Bing was old enough to have responsibilities, so she decided to give him an allowance of $1 a week. When it came time for him to receive his first dollar, Bing said,
Mother, may I have my allowance?
Why, certainly, son. Here it is.
Oh, but Mother, I'm supposed to get a dollar allowance. How come you only gave me 90 cents?
Brother Everett gets 10%.
Started, folks. By now, Bing was attending high school, and one day on his way to class, he ran into his best friend, Robert Leslie Hope. Hope suggested they play hooky, which they did. They went down to the corner fruit store and swiped apples, and they went around tipping over ash cans and breaking windows. This was the start of their first picture, The Road to Reform School. But Bing went on to college. He and his brother Bob shared the same room at Gonzaga University. They shared everything. They even took their Saturday night baths together. And they enjoyed it because it gave them a chance to harmonize.
The roads are the dustiest, the winds are the gustiest, the gates are the rustiest, the pie's the crustiest, the song's the lustiest, the folks the trustiest, way back home. The trees are the sappiest, the days are the nappiest, the dogs are the yappiest, the kids the scrappiest, the jokes the snappiest, the folks the happiest, way back home. I don't know why I left the homestead. We Crosbys had such fun.
Yeah, but Bing,
we drove the neighbors crazy. Yeah. They had to move. Yes, one by one. Bob was the littlest, Sister Kay the prettiest, Larry was the dumpiest, Mary Rose the plumpiest,
Bing's clothes the dingiest, Everett the stingiest.
All right.
Way back home.
Soloista.
Let's light a lucky strike. That's sure a smoke I like. My folks are tearing them, and they're comparing them. Yes, it's a favorite smoke of all the smartest folk. Way back home. A luck. He is round and firm, that's more than just a term. It's made of fine tobacco, there's 20 in a pack. No puff is ever rough, it's Lucky's we all puff. Way back home.
Lucky strikes are better tasting.
What feeling?
And there are no loose ends.
That's my boy, grease the
this
sponsor.
This is my butter and eggs, lay on. Yeah. Cleaner, fresher, smoother,
make
smoke.
Make it sound sincere.
You'll be proud to give your friend.
We folks are the happiest.
My brothers are the snappiest.
Everett the daffiest.
Bob is the pappiest.
You said it.
We're happy it is true.
To go back with you.
Way back home.
When he graduated from college, Bing's ambition was to become a singer. His career really started with an audition in Los Angeles.
Your name is Harry Lillis Crosby?
Yes, sir, but most people call me Bing.
Tell me, have you made any phonograph records?
Yes, sir. I made lots of records. I made them for a company owned by Rudy Vallee, but I think he's jealous of me.
Now, how can you say Rudy was jealous? He let you make the records, didn't he?
Yeah, but he wouldn't put the holes in the middle.
Young man, Jan, you know, I like you. I'm going to give you a chance. Here, learn this song, and tomorrow night, you'll sing on a coast-to-coast radio network.
And the following night, for the first time in history, the rich baritone voice of Bing Crosby was heard as he sang...
Crunchy munchies hit the spot from a cannon. They are shot. They will become your favorite dish. They are better than Cavilla fish.
Bing was on his way to success, and with fame and wealth, his interests became diversified. For instance, one day he witnessed the following scene.
I'll buy that racehorse.
That's a very good horse you're buying, Mr. Crosby.
All right, but tell me, what does he go the mile in?
Well, I don't know. He never quite made it.
Well, look, Mr.
Crosby, your horse can win its first race if you'll tell the jockey that's riding it to holler giddy-up and throw this little electrical switch on the saddle.
Oh, is there a battery under there?
No, it turns on his hearing aid.
Could afford a stable of slow horses. He had gone into pictures. His movie career was always successful, but it became more so because of three brilliant decisions. He made Going My Way, he made Bells of St. Mary's, and he turned down The Horn Blows at Midnight. His career really reached its zenith on a night in March in 1945 when he won the Academy Award. His acceptance speech was quite modest, as he said.
I want to thank everyone who helped me win this Oscar. Even though I have supposedly reached the top as a singer, I want you to know that it has not been easy. I've had to overcome many hardships, poverty, disease, hunger, Como and Sinatra.
Yes, Bing had reached the very top, and yet his fortunes grew and grew. He had records, television, movies, radio, frozen food, inventions, cattle, and oil wells. Yes, the world was his. And I wish he'd give it back already. This is Bing's true story.
Bing, I want to thank you very much for taking Dennis Day's place on the program.
I was glad to do it, Jack.
Tell me, Bing, is Dennis really going to caddy for you when you play golf with Ben Hogan tomorrow?
That's right.
And you and Ben are playing for $100 a hole?
Mm-hmm.
Well, do you mind if I join you? You know, I'd like to pick up a little extra money.
What makes you think you'd win?
I can't lose. I'm going to caddy for Hogan.
Oh.
Good night, Bing. Good night, folks.
Jack Benny program is written by Sam Perrin, Milt Josephsburg, George Balter, John Packerberry, and produced and transcribed by Hilliard Marks.
This is the CBS Radio Network.
From February of 1953, it's been the Jack Benny program with special guest star Bing Crosby. In a moment, it'll be time to turn the lights out and the haunted cell as yesteryear continues.
You're listening to listener-supported Swing Street Radio. Swing Street Radio, where the big band swing. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Lights Out, radio's ultimate horror program, was heard locally on Chicago station WENR as a late-night 1934 15-minute feature. The show was created by Willis Cooper, then a staffer at NBC's Chicago studios. On April of 1935, it opened Wednesdays on NBC Red. Tucked away in an after-midnight slot in its early days, the program offered imaginative plays so filled with sinister, throat-clenching sound effects that it created a sensation. Upon Cooper's departure for the West Coast in 1936, NBC brought in Arch Obler, a young playwright who had done some work for Rudy Valley and Grand Hotel. Lights Out really became Obler's show. From his first program in May of 1936, Obler approached each new script as a challenge. After 2 years of consistently trying to top himself, Obler quit and began his famous plays series. Lights Out continued for a year after Obler's departure, the show running until August of 1939. In October of 1942, Obler resurrected Lights Out from New York as a 30-minute Tuesday night entry for CBS. That ran until September of 1943. A final series came to Mutual in July of 1947. Lights Out moved to television in 1949, continuing until 1952. However, the TV version never really achieved the popularity of the radio show. Here now, from the late 1940s, is Lights Out and The Haunted Cell, another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
The National Broadcasting Company presents Lights Out. Tonight's story is entitled The Haunted Cell.
Lights out, everybody. This is the witching hour. It is the hour when dogs howl and evil things are let loose on a sleeping world. Sit in the dark now and listen to Lights Out.
So you don't believe in ghosts, huh? Let me tell you something, friend. Guys that don't believe in ghosts is guys that ain't never seen none, ain't that right? Listen, I can tell you a ghost story that'll make your hair curl. I'll say it'll make your hair curl. Listen. Last August, I was nabbed by a couple of coppers. Never mind the details. It just so happened that they come up on me when I was sticking up a filling station and, well, they drug me in. It was a tough rap to beat. Since they got me standing there flat-footed, holding a gun on one of the filling station guys, and, well, the coppers didn't like me anyway. Huh? Oh, yeah, sure. Because I'd had to bump off a copper a week or two before. And wouldn't it be my luck to be picked up by this guy's partner? Well, they took me in, and they decided to show me the goldfish. You don't know what that is, huh? Well, I'll tell you.
You're a lion.
Yeah? So what, copper?
You rat. I know you knocked off Ambrose Hogan, and you're gonna fry for it.
You gotta prove it first, Miller.
Pull the light over this way a little more, John.
Okay.
Right in his eyes. I'll prove it, rat.
Go ahead.
Hand me the hose, John.
Now look here. Don't you go ahead.
Now what do you say?
I'm not going to rat to no fight.
You ain't, huh?
You'll wait till I get to a mouthpiece, Miller. You'll be walking a beat out in Circleville where the elf...
It won't make no difference to you, punk, where I'm walking a beat, not when you're burned.
Yeah. Who's going to burn me?
You knocked off Ambrose Hogan.
I was in Omaha the night he got knocked off.
Listen, Maxie. Get this now. Ambrose Hogan was a white guy. When I seen him laying on a slab downstairs, I took a solemn oath I'd get the rat that done it if it took me.
You ought to hire a... I'll get you for this, copper.
I don't think you're going to get anything out of him, Miller.
There's a smart copper, Miller.
Yeah? Listen, I got a way to get things out of smart guys like you, Maxie. Come on over here, John.
What are you going to do? Listen, Miller.
Shut up.
You can... I want a lawyer. You got to let me have a lawyer. You can't get away.
You want to sing, Maxie? Or do you want to spend a few hours in a haunted cell upstairs?
So what? Oh, another gag, huh?
Think so? Listen, I bet you $8 you change your mind, baby. Get up.
What are you doing?
Get going. Go ahead, John. Open the door.
Okay.
What are you going to do to me? You can't get away.
Never know Skeeter Dempsey, Maxie. Come on this way.
What about him? They burned him last winter.
Yeah, that's right. Friend of yours?
I knowed him.
Well, that's just fine, Maxie. Yes, sir, that'll be just dandy.
What you asking about Skeeter Dempsey for, Miller?
Peter killed a copper, too.
So what?
It's bad business to kill coppers, Max. All ready, John?
All ready, yeah.
Right this way, Maxie, my boy.
What you up to?
I'll tell you. Right in there, baby. Get in there. Now, listen. This here's the cell that Skeeter Dempsey was locked up in when he first came here. He liked the cell, Maxie. He still likes it.
What do you mean?
He'll probably be around to see you before the night's over.
Oh, yeah? Another one of your gags, huh? Well, you won't kid me, copper.
This whole corridor, Maxie, you're the only guy in it. Except Skeeter Dempsey. We'll see what a night here with him will do to you, huh, John?
Yeah.
If you get scared, Maxie, just call. Just yell. Nobody will pay any attention to you. Nobody at all. Except maybe Skeeter Dempsey. Good night, Max. Come on, John.
Hey, listen now.
Pleasant dreams, you rat.
You can't scare me, Miller. I know your gags. You can't scare me.
No, we'll see about that.
Ghosts. Hey, I want a lawyer.
Good night, Maxie.
Hey, you can't turn the lights out on me. Miller, turn the lights back on, Miller. You can't leave me here in the dark.
Can't, huh?
Miller, Miller, why are you blackbird? Miller, come back here. Miller, I'm scared. Turn the lights on, Miller. For the love of Mike, I'm scared of the dark. Go on. Turn the lights on, Miller. Please. Miller, listen. Take me out of here and...
Cut out the yellow and sit down.
Who are you?
Know me, Maxie? I'm Skeeter Dempsey.
You can't be. It's a gag. Listen, copper.
I'm no copper, Max. Sit down. Let's talk about things.
Where are you?
Right here.
Wait. Wait till I light a match. I want to see what you look like.
You'll be surprised, Max.
There ain't nobody here.
Oh, yes, there is, Maxie. I'm right here beside you, kid.
Yeah? It was Skeeter Dempsey, all right. I recognized his voice right away. When I lit the match and couldn't see nobody there, I guess I fainted. I remember trying to yell, only my voice wouldn't work, and when I come to, I was laying on the cell floor. For a minute, I couldn't figure out what happened, and then it all come back to me. You know how it is when you're really scared? Or maybe you've never been real scared, huh? Well, I'll tell you. My mouth was so dry, I couldn't hardly breathe. All I could hear was my heart pumping away as loud as an old flivver engine. I was too scared to say a word. I just crawled up onto the bunk and lay there. Listen. Listen.
So I scared you, huh, Maxie?
Listen. Go away now. Whoever you are, go away. Go away.
Oh, shut up. I ain't gonna hurt you.
I could pray you away.
No, you couldn't, Maxie. You couldn't pray me away. What they got you in here for?
Bumping off. Hey.
Nothing. You knocked off that Hogan guy, didn't you? Well, it's too bad for you, Max.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you still here?
Sure.
You ain't Skeeter Dempsey.
Yes, I am.
Listen. Skeeter Dempsey was burned last winter. I know a reporter that seen him set in a chair.
That's right.
Well, then you ain't Skeeter Dempsey.
Yes, I am.
I know you're Skeeter. I know.
Stop jittering. I ain't gonna hurt you.
But you're a ghost.
Well, what if I am?
I wish you'd go away.
Why should I? This is my cell, after all.
Oh, Skeeter, please.
Oh, can I? Listen, let's talk. I haven't had nobody to talk to for 2 months.
Who'd you talk to then?
George Brown. You remember him.
Yeah, ice guy, yeah. Hey, George Brown hung himself in a cell here.
Yeah. This cell.
This cell?
Uh-huh. Him and me sat up and talked all night. And he hung himself next day.
What'd he hang himself for?
Oh, he'd have got burned anyway. They had him for 2 jobs. One knocking off an old lady for $70, and the other shooting that bank guy down in Springfield.
Did you see him hang himself, Skeeter?
No, I wasn't here at the time.
Where was you?
Oh, I was away.
Skeeter?
Yeah?
What does it feel like to be dead?
All right.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
What's the matter?
Well, what about hell and all that?
You get used to it.
My old lady used to make me go to Sunday school, and they used to talk about hell there. Fire and everything.
There ain't no fire.
Ain't they?
No. It's worse than that.
What? What's it like?
You'll find out.
If I get out of this rap, I think I'll go straight.
You're too late, Max.
No, I ain't. I'll beat it.
No, you won't. You gotta croak.
Sometime, yeah.
You'll croak on this rap.
How do you know?
I know. There's one way you could get out of some of the hell, though, Max.
How?
Bump yourself off.
What do you mean?
Well, if you wait for the law to punish you, that's one thing. If you take the law in your own hands and, well, kind of punish yourself, it'll make a difference.
Is it pretty tough, Skeeter?
What, hell?
Dying.
It hurts awful. The chair, I mean. You go in feeling pretty cocky and figuring you can take it and you're going to be a tough guy and all. And then...
What then, Skeeter?
All of a sudden, you find you can't take it. You don't want to yell and scream, but... Well, that's awful.
God. What that, Skeeter?
You ain't never had no pain in all your life, Max. You can begin to compare with the chair.
Yeah?
You'll find out.
Do you really think I will, Skeeter?
What do you think?
I wonder how it feels.
George Brown said it was all right. Kind of made him feel better, he said.
He said?
Yeah, I seen him the day after.
Oh. Huh?
If I was you, Max, I think I'd do it.
Yeah. I'm not going to bump myself off. I won't do it. These lousy coppers ain't going to make me. Who's that?
Miller, I guess.
Is that you, Miller?
Who was you talking to, Maxie? Skeeter Dempsey?
Listen, Miller, let me out of here. No kidding, let me out. Put me any place you want to, but listen, Miller.
Scared, Maxie? Who was you talking to, Maxie? Skeeter Dempsey?
Miller, put the love on. Listen, Miller, turn on the lights. Will you turn them on, Miller, just for a minute?
Dark's got you down, huh?
Miller, please, turn on the lights.
Well, why not? It'll be darker still when I turn them off again. What's the matter now?
Miller, there ain't anybody here.
That's right. Was Skeeter in here with you, kid?
I thought... There ain't anybody here.
Oh, yes, there is, Max.
I would worry about
it, Max. I'm right here beside you. And I'm gonna stay. kept me in that cell there for 4 weeks. Every once in a while, Miller'd come in and stand there in front of the door and laugh at me. Gonna sign a confession, Maxie? He'd say. Well, I wasn't gonna give him nothing. But that place got me. Just as soon as it was dark, I'd hear Skeeter Dempsey's footsteps and he'd come and sit down with me. I was awful scared at first. It's kind of hard to get used to practically living with a ghost. But then I kind of got used to him. He was always telling me how I was gonna burn and how I'd be better off to hang myself like George Brown done. I guess I was ready for nothing. Miller wouldn't let me have no lawyers either. They was keeping me in there without knowing anything about it so as they could hand me the rap when the time come. Well, the time come. Someplace or other, Miller dug up the evidence that I wouldn't give them, and they had me. And how they had me. So one morning, a few weeks later, I'm sitting in the courtroom. The jury's been out 20 minutes.
Everybody rise. Sit down.
Gentlemen of the jury, have you arrived at a verdict?
We have, Your Honor.
Will you pass the verdict to the bailiff, please?
We, the jury, find the defendant, Max Young, guilty of murder in the first degree.
Mr. Foreman, is this your verdict?
It is, Your Honor.
The defendant will rise.
Get up, Maxie.
Max Young, have you anything to say before sentence is passed on you?
Well, No, Your Honor.
You realize that in a verdict of guilty of first-degree murder, the death penalty is mandatory?
Yeah. Yeah, Your Honor.
Very well, then. It is the sentence of this court that you are to be taken from this place and between the 21st and the 30th of December, shocked to death by electricity. And may God have mercy on your soul.
All right, Maxie. Come on this way. Well, Max, that's that.
Yeah. What'd you say?
I didn't say nothing.
It was me, Max. I said there's only one way out. Now.
Well, so that was that. They wasn't ready to send me down to the state prison where they bump off guys, so they kept me in this here wing of the county jail where they had me, in Skeeter Dempsey's old cell. I guess this guy Miller must have liked his pal Ambrose Hogan quite a lot, the guy I knocked off. Huh? Sure I knocked him off. What's the use of kidding around? Yeah, guess he must have thought a lot of him, because he kept me in there where it was dark, where I'd be scared to death all the time. Really getting even. But I kind of fooled him. I wasn't so scared of Skeeter by this time. I got so I'd sit in the dark there and be waiting for him. And we'd talk about everything in the world. It was funny. People out of history and funny places and stuff and, oh, a lot of things. Skeeter told me he saw a lot of the guys we talked about. Nero and Judas Iscariot. But why not? He was dead, wasn't he? And so was they. Oh, but I gotta hurry up with my ghost story, ain't I? That's right. What I was gonna say was, I was sitting there one night, the 23rd it was. Day before Christmas Eve, sitting in the dark, and I heard Skeeter come.
Skeeter!
Skeeter.
Hello, Max. How you feeling?
Not so hot.
Still thinking about the hot squad, huh?
What else you expect me to think about? I wish they'd hurry up and get it over with. That's what I wish.
It's tomorrow night.
What is?
They burned you.
On Christmas Eve?
Yep.
Honest, Skeeter. How do you know?
I found out.
Oh, God.
Well, don't take it so hard. I'll walk in with you when I take you to the chair. I'll stand right there alongside you.
Will you, Skeeter? Will you, honest?
Sure. Won't do you much good, though.
Why?
I can't keep it from hurting you.
Honest, Skeeter, does it hurt a lot? Or is it all over with pretty quick?
It seemed to me to last 100 years.
Oh, I'm a sucker for pain, Skeeter.
Are you?
Sure. I cut my finger once. I put in a croak with the pain.
You ain't felt nothing yet.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Gee, I remember too when I busted my leg. My old lady sat up all night holding my hand and me bawling.
This'll feel like a million busted legs.
Listen, Skeeter.
What?
Didn't you say George Brown told you it didn't hurt much bumping yourself off?
That's what he said. What?
I was wondering.
Well, I know what I'd do if I was in your place.
Yeah? Would you bump yourself off?
Yeah.
I don't think I got the guts to do it, Skeeter.
Ain't hard. You got a belt. You could get it around your neck and climb up on the bunk and fasten the belt to the bars up above. Then all you gotta do is jump off.
Yeah.
You know, it would help you out if you did.
What do you mean?
Well, you know, I told you. Kind of punishing yourself, see?
I know. But I can't, Skeeter. I can't. I don't want to die.
Well, it's all right with me. I was just telling you. Believe me, lad, I know what I'm talking about.
Do you, honest, Skeeter? Do you?
Yeah.
I wish I had the guts to do it.
I don't care what you do, Maxie. Only you're going to get burned tomorrow night anyway. And if you want to get out of the most awful pain you ever had, do yourself a good turn at the same time. Well?
I wonder what it feels like.
George Brown said it only hurt for a minute.
He never had much guts. That I remember.
No. Here comes Miller. Gonna tell you, I guess.
Yeah.
You don't look very happy.
You what? Can you see in the dark?
Yeah.
Hello, Max.
Hello, Miller.
Want me to turn on the lights?
I don't care.
You getting used to the dark?
Yeah.
Well, I'll turn them on anyway. Well, Max, it's about the end of the string, huh?
Tomorrow, huh?
Yeah.
Well, that makes you and me even.
Listen, Max. I wanted to see you knocked off on account of Ambrose Hogan.
I ain't sore, Miller.
You know.
Yeah. No hard feelings, Miller. It's your job being a copper and mine being a hood.
Yeah. Well, is there anything you want, Maxie?
No, I guess not.
You ain't got no folks?
No.
I could get you a bottle of bourbon if you wanted it.
Nah, what's the use?
Well, you gotta get ready to go down to the state prison in a little while. They got the... Well, I mean, that's where you gotta go.
Do I have to go today?
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, kinda hate to leave this place at that.
Do you?
Yeah. Scared me quite a lot at first, but I guess it's taught me a lot, being here in the dark all alone.
Except for me, Max.
Yeah.
Well, Max, listen. Try to take it standing up, will you? You know.
I'll try, Miller. But it's going to be awful tough.
Yeah. Well, look, I'll be back in a little bit and we'll go. Sure there ain't anything you want me to get, Max.
No.
All right. Oh. I'm sorry, Max.
Huh? It's okay, Miller. Forget it.
I told you, Max.
Yeah.
Well, I gotta be going. So long, Max.
You going, Skeeter?
Yeah. I'll, see you tomorrow night.
But listen, Skeeter, don't go away now.
I have to. And just in case you decide to do what George Brown did, there's an extra piece of rope under the mattress. You won't have to use your belt. So long.
Well, there you are. That's your ghost story. You believe in ghosts now? You don't? Well, you oughta. You see, I took Skeeter's advice. I hung myself. I've been dead 6 months.
All right. You can turn them on now.
Tonight's story featured Norman Gottschalk as Maxie, Stanley Shewell as Skeeter Dempsey, and Roy Engel as Miller. Boris Aplon was heard as the judge, and Nathan Davis as Johnny.
From the late 1940s, it's been Arch Obler's Lights Out with The Haunted Cell. Well, that's all the time we have for today. Tune in again next week, and why not invite a friend to listen to more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those thrilling days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our listening nightly to our favorite show, radio. I miss you, so-dio, vo-dio, do-dio, do, radio.